RCR with Paul Brennan, Reality Check Radio.
Time now for the Wilms Report. Tim Wilms beaming in from the Unshackled.net in Melbourne, Australia. Morning, Tim. How are you?
I'm good, thank you, Paul. The weather has turned dark, wet and stormy again. Oh. It's probably a metaphor because after the free speech rally in Melbourne had concluded, I think it was basically a sign of the pending threat to free speech in Victoria because the Melbourne free speech rally, which was attended by 300 people approximately, so it would have been good to get more, but it was on the same weekend as CPAC Australia in Brisbane, where freedom fighters from Victoria, Monica Schmidt, Topher Field and Nick Patterson were speaking. And there also would have been some Victorians who would have travelled up as well. So the rally was was organised mainly against the federal government's proposed disinformation laws, but it was mainly organised, this rally, by the Libertarian Party of Victoria. And during last week, their MLC in State Parliament, David Limbrick, brought our attention to this huge threat to free speech in Victoria, the Allan government's proposed anti-vilification expansion. So I've previously said to you that Victoria's free speech laws are probably the least worse in the nation. Of course, Jacinta Allan and the state Labor government, they were not going to let that stand.
So the vilification expansion bill, is that what you call it? It sounds like, you know, some product you can get the expansion pack, you know.
It's not a bill that has been drafted yet. So there are for public submissions, which close on October the 11th.
That's pretty soon. That's not far away.
Yeah, so currently, since 2001, there's been the Racial and Religious Tolerance Act, who the most high-profile target civilly was Pastor Danny Nalia of the Catch the Fires Ministry and Rise Up Australia Party for calling Islam a violent religion. He eventually got VCAT, our Civil and Administrative Tribunal, verdict overturned that cost him millions of dollars.
It's always the way.
The criminal, most high-profile criminal convictions under the Racial and Religious Tolerance Act was a United Patriots Front activist, Blair Cottrell, Neil Erickson and Chris Shortis, when they beheaded a dummy outside of the Bendigo town hall where a proposed mosque was being built while they were dressed in Arab towels. So they got a $2,000 fine each and a criminal conviction, but they weren't sentenced to prison. The maximum penalty under the Racial and Religious Tolerance Act is 6 months. Under this expanded law, it's going to be in the Crimes Act, incitement to hatred against, severe ridicule, contempt, or revulsion towards another person or a protected group. And so the protected attributes are going to be not just race and religion, but disability, gender identity, sex characteristics, sexual orientation, and personal associations with people of those protected attributes. And so the definition of disability would protect people with HIV/AIDS or mental illness, and the definition of gender identity would protect drag performers. This was one of the reasons why they are wanting to introduce these laws to ban protests against drag queen story times at public libraries. So for the incitement offence, the maximum criminal penalty will be increased by 600% from 6 months in prison to 3 years. And then there's a threat offence, which if a member of the group believes that they could be under the threat of physical harm, it's 5 years in prison. So that is a big increase in the maximum penalty.
There's a lot of who think in there. You know, who decides where the line is here. It's
exactly, especially something such as severe ridicule, which are satirists. Are they going to be imprisoned? Is there Ricky Gervais, if he ever tours Australia? Is he?
Well, there's
going...
ridicule, but where do you cross the line to severe?
Exactly. And this is the thing about these acts. I believe that they are intentionally ambiguous, subjective.
Yep.
So they can deliberately target people. So there's also a new civil protection against conduct that is hateful, serious, contemptuous, reviling, or severely ridiculing. So there's a new harm-based protection in the civil provision, which somebody can take action in VCAT, our Civil and Administrative Tribunal. And one of the examples of conduct that might be captured is saying hateful things about a person's gender identity at a public gathering. And that sounds like it's targeted at Let Women Speak events. Why else would they include that example?
They are heading for a confrontation. I can't believe they can't see that, but they're heading for a showdown with that, if that gets anywhere. I'm telling you.
Dave Limbrick, who spoke at the rally, he's going to be spearheading the opposition to this bill in the state parliament. The Libertarian Party's Victorian Senate candidate, Jordan Diplof, he chainsawed, destroyed the disinformation bill, Javier Milei style, so one up in Sydney where they burnt the bill. So we're being hit from the federal and state levels as well, hit in both fronts. We haven't heard from the state Liberal opposition whether they're going to oppose this expansion of anti-vilification laws. The federal Liberal and National parties have said that they're opposing the disinformation laws.
Yeah, gosh. Now, have I heard correctly that Kelly Jay is trying to or wants to come back to Australia? Some people I see have been saying things along the lines that she's been denied entry, but that's not the case, is it? She hasn't been denied entry, but they're slow walking it. Is that what's happening?
Well, she was supposed to be at CPAC Australia in Brisbane on the weekend.
Right. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Although they didn't deny Liz Truss, the former British Prime Minister, a visa. That would have been certainly, though they didn't actually technically, the Home Affairs Department, deny Kelly J. Keene a visa. They just didn't process it in time. So they can claim that it wasn't denied. It just wasn't processed in time. I remember they did this shenanigan with Graham Lynham when he toured Australia. He eventually got the visa, but it meant that his dates had to be delayed. And of course, he is also a gender critical as well.
Hmm. And Moira Deeming, did she make an appearance? Because remember the last one, they got her into trouble.
Not at CPAC Australia. She was
in Melbourne, right?
Yes, she made an appearance at the free speech rally. She didn't speak, though. She was there with her husband, Andrew, and her three children. Thankfully, it was in the back of my mind that the National Socialist Network might have gate-crashed this event to protest against the banning of Nazi symbols. And obviously, that wouldn't have worked out well for Moira, given that's why she is in court at the moment, suing her ex-leader, John Pesciuto, for defamation, for tarring her with the Nazi brush. It took two goes to expel her from the parliamentary Liberal Party room. She's still a Liberal Party member, because you can't expel her from the party. So it's in its fourth week now, the defamation trial. It's now closing submissions by both John Pesciuto's counsel, Dr. Matthew Collins, KC, and Moira Deeming's lawyer, Sue Cristano. John Pesciuto didn't come across well in the cross-examination by Sue Cristano. So she described his dossier as like an 8-year-old's homework. And he keeps saying that it wasn't about Moira's views on sex-based rights. It was about the associations of Kelly J. Keene and Angie Jones. But that dossier was full of errors, and he's had to settle and apologize to both of those women. There was the court proceedings, which are being live streamed on the Federal Court's YouTube channel, were adjourned because of a security breach last Friday when a man dressed like a security worker was found in the courtroom with a bunch of eggs. And according to the Herald Sun, the man was heard asking members of the public gallery where Miss Deeming typically sat in the courtroom minutes before the hearing was due to resume after a lunch break. But we still have the sacked Breastfeeding Australia volunteer, Jasmine Sussex, a Victorian, taken to the Queensland Human Rights Commission by a Queensland trans woman mother because Jasmine Sussex said he couldn't breastfeed, called it a fetish. We've already got these cross-jurisdictional. And, of course, at the federal level, we've got the eSafety Commissioner, Julie M. Mann Grant, trying to censor the whole world of vision. And also the federal anti-doxing law that can potentially be targeted at TERFs and gender-critical activists. So, like I said before, we're being hit from everywhere with these anti-free speech laws.
Yeah, they seem to, the gender thing is the hill they seem to want to die on for some reason. Mail-in ballots sent out. And also, I want you to tell us why fire and rescue workers are still mandated. Let's go with the mail-in ballots first.
Yes, so that's in regard to our local government elections. So the Victorian Electoral Commission, it's all done by mail-in ballot, which of course is safe, secure, effective. There can never be any impropriety, even though one councillor was disqualified for mail-in electoral fraud following the 2020 Victorian local government cycles, which that also would have been a COVID breach, wouldn't it? I don't think it was a reasonable excuse to leave the home to go and steal people's mail to commit electoral fraud.
No one would ever do that.
So it is 3 weeks. We have a voting's compulsory to fill in our mail-in ballots. And there is a lack of transparency in Victorian local government elections. You just get this pamphlet of all the candidates and they don't disclose who, like which party they're with. So you've got to make sure you don't accidentally vote for a Labor, a Green socialist. The Labor machine is very tricky at hiding Labor Party associations. So I believe that we should have, like New South Wales and Queensland, and like we do for state and federal elections, in attendance voting on a Saturday. Queensland goes to the polls on October the 26th. The state election, we'll get to that in a moment. Although we had a win, as you're alluding to, for Victorian health workers. They no longer have to be jabbed with the COVID vax, but Fire Rescue Victoria workers and volunteers, according to the Fire Rescue Commissioner, Gavin Freeman, in response to a letter by the member for Monash, Russell Broadbent, who is unvaccinated. So Monash is an electorate in Victoria. He is ex-Liberal MP. He lost pre-selection. He is championing those who are vaccine injured and those who are still out of work because of refusing the vaccine. Yes, Gavin Freeman said that it's important for fire rescue volunteers to be vaccinated for COVID as they deliver life-saving medical care as part of emergency medical response partnership with Ambulance Victoria.
Yeah, but it doesn't work.
But at least you'll be rescued from a burning building by someone who is jabbed. Though if they're short of volunteers, well, apparently it's safer for you to burn to death rather than be rescued by somebody who's not jabbed for COVID.
Or they'll have a heart attack or stroke while they're trying to get you out of the building. Speaking of which, there have been some statistics that seem to be mirroring some stats that have come out here in New Zealand.
Yes, so this is the increase in emergency department presentation for chest pains and heart issues. So we got some data from New South Wales Health, which was broken by Ben Fordham on 2GB. So there was a 52% increase in ED presentations for chest pains and heart issues from 2019 to 2021. And of course, 2021 was the big vaccine rollout. So from 2020, it went from 34,000 presentations per year, shot up to, pardon the pun, 52,000. And Ben Fordham, the day after he got this data, interviewed the New South Wales Health Minister, Ryan Park, who said, admitted there was a link between the COVID vaccines and myopericarditis. So we shouldn't have YouTube or anything taking this down now. We have a New South Wales government minister admitting the link.
Yeah, I think I heard some of that audio. He was still playing it down as very rare, but those stats would suggest completely otherwise.
Well, they're still maintaining that the COVID vaccine saved more lives than there were people who suffered adverse reactions. Maybe that's true for the very, very old, but forcing healthy 18-year-olds to get the jab, I mean, clearly the risk benefit, it was completely unnecessary for them to be forced to get the vaccines.
Okay, and quickly, you mentioned that election on the 26th of October. There was a bit more info on that.
Yes, so Stephen Giggles-Miles, the incumbent Labor Premier, he's trying to save as many seats, hoping that the party is not wiped out like it was in 2012 when Campbell Newman was elected LNP Premier, 78 out of 89 seats. Now, he was voted out after one term. That's when Anastasia Palaszczuk became the Premier. The current Liberal National Party leader, David Crisafulli, is having a very small target strategy. Campbell Newman has said that they're treating me like Voldemort because they're not promising any budget cutbacks, because apparently the mythology is that that's why he was voted out. Campbell Newman's actually with the Libertarian Party now, though he wasn't a Libertarian when he was Premier. In my opinion, his most egregious act as Premier was the Vicious Lawlessness Association Establishment Act, the Vlad Laws, which was supposed to break up biker gangs, but could have broken up, say, gangs of libertarians. So he's gone over a transformation over the past decade. I mean, as a libertarian myself, I certainly hated him as Premier.
What has happened with David Speirs, opposition leader in South Australia? What's he been caught doing?
So this, I should say, is the former South Australian Liberal opposition leader.
Okay, former, yep.
Yes, so back on September 9, the Adelaide Advertiser, local Murdoch tabloid in South Australia, published a video of him snorting a white substance in his home. He said that it's not me, it's a deep fake, but now he's been charged by South Australian police with two counts of supplying a controlled substance. And so it seems this is the first occasion where we've had a politician try to claim, no, that's not me, it was a deep fake. I remember 7 years ago we had the federal Liberal Defence Minister, Christopher Pyne, claiming that his Twitter was hacked when he liked some gay porn the day after the same-sex marriage vote. He said he was hacked. And there wasn't an official investigation into it, even though he was the defence minister. Malcolm Turnbull, the prime minister, said, it's just a lesson for us all to change passwords. Though I was given, it was leaked to me, the internal probe. The only way he would have been hacked if somebody took his phone out of his pocket, knew his passcode, logged into his Twitter app and liked the gay porn Christopher Pyne, he's a defense lobbyist now. He's a married Catholic father of four. There's long been rumors about him. It might have been one of his staffers, because apparently most of them were gay as well.
Okay.
That's a doozy of a story from times gone by.
All right, in the short time we have left, two things. Federal police have charged a 19-year-old woman with wearing a scarf. Would this have anything to do with October the 7th?
It is displaying the Hezbollah flag. Federal government passed laws prohibiting the symbols of terrorist organizations and that of Nazi Germany, National Socialism. So originally the federal police said, the public display of a terrorist symbol, it wasn't enough to warrant an arrest. And clearly the federal police, they weren't reading the law that they're supposed to enforce after there was public outcry. Because say if the National Socialists and Nazis had turned up on Saturday at the free speech rally waving Nazi flags, they would have been arrested. The federal police, they have charged this 19-year-old woman. They have released the images of seven men they wish to speak with for displaying the Hezbollah flag. Despite the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, and the Victorian Premier, Jacinta Allen, saying that pro-Palestine marches shouldn't take place on the Sunday, which is October 6th or October 7th, because obviously it's not an appropriate day, but the pro-Palestine people, they just don't care. They're like, it's when the bombing began of Gaza. They clearly don't care about optics. Some on Sunday were displaying just blank yellow flags, clearly trying to get around the law, but clearly why would you have a yellow flag at a pro-Palestine rally if you weren't going to be supporting Hezbollah? But it's interesting, Premier Jacinta Allen, she says, we can't possibly stop this pro-Palestine rally. The Liberal opposition there as Shadow Attorney General said, we've got this archaic riot act which allows you to shut down rallies. Their justification is, well, rallies were shut down during COVID, but that shouldn't be the precedent. But it is interesting they're able to shut down all of the COVID rallies, fire rubber bullets, arrest them. But, we can't stop a pro-Palestine rally because, well, freedom of assembly is absolute. Well, it is now.
Watch that space. And the coffee on the baby story has, well, there's more on that. And is there, well, I wouldn't say happy ending, but how's the baby doing?
So baby Luca is how he is being known. So at Hanlon Park on August 27, baby Luca was attacked randomly with a scalding coffee by a man of Asian appearance, and Queensland police at the time said that he had fled the country but didn't say what Asian nationality he was. We now know that he has fled to China, where he is from, and that according to a friend, it was an anti-white hate crime. He wanted revenge on white people after he was denied another Australian visa, so decided just to randomly attack a defenseless white baby. I'm glad that he was denied a visa.
Yeah, they got that right. Yeah.
It would have been good if Queensland police were, they should have focused their energy on getting him before he left the country rather than trying to be sensitive about his identity.
And the baby is okay?
Yes, is back to his happy self, could have permanent scarring, though. We've seen video of baby Luca behaving like a normal, almost one-year-old baby, which is pleasing to see. But what's happening to our countries? I mean, I heard about a 14-year-old schoolgirl in the UK getting randomly attacked by acid outside of her school after school. What is...
I wish I could answer that. I don't know.
I
wonder that all the time. And so do the audience, our audience. They're wondering that all the time too. What is wrong with everyone? Okay, Tim, great to hear you again. Thanks for reporting in. And we'll
I'll be at the annual Melbourne March for the Babies this Saturday, the 12th of October, the annual pro-life march. So that's normally, there's a counter protest by Antifa, the pro-abortionists. So there was no Antifa at the free speech rally protesting on Saturday, but they'll definitely be there this Saturday. They're the pro-abortionists. So I'll bring you a report on that next Monday.
Thank you, Tim. We'll talk then.
Thank you, Paul.
The RCR shop has great gift ideas, from great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.